Welcome to the Mumbrella Podcast, brought to you from the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. With me today, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alacon.
Hello.
Our resident pundit Scott Rohde of House Party PR.
Hey, Tim.
And this week's guest, Adobe's Global Marketing President, Anna Lunis.
Hello.
Who we'll be talking digital with in a moment. Also today, the PR who got busted hiring actors for a news story. Ads on the ABC's Australian Story, thanks to YouTube. Oops. FBI Radio's Ask Richard campaign wins big at the Emmy Awards. Plus, a rare win for 10 in the TV ratings. And finally, we can complain about free-to-air TV online. So, we start today's podcast with Anna Lunis, and welcome along. Now, before we chat further, then probably what's maybe best is to get straight what products we would actually know Adobe for.
So Adobe makes photos like Photoshop and Flash technology, which runs about 85% of the video on the web. We make Acrobat, so any PDF you might receive is an Adobe product.
So life would be fairly different inside an advertising agency without those products, probably.
It'd be pretty hard to make advertising without our products, or publishing, or movies, or any other type of media.
And what brings you to Australia?
I'm here to talk to you.
Well, it was good of you to come. Thank you.
You're very welcome. No, I'm here. Australia is our biggest market in the Asia-Pacific region. I've never been here. And so meeting employees, meeting customers. Yesterday, I went to a fabulous school called the Arthur Phillip High School. And as you know, New South Wales is giving every single student a netbook computer loaded with all types of software. So we visited this school and talked to the kids about what they're doing with their netbooks. And it was incredibly inspiring to see grade 9 kids creating movies, creating photographs, and just generally really enjoying technology.
Okay, well, let's establish your marketing credentials. Back in 97, you were named one of the top 25 young women to watch by Advertising Age. And in 2000, you were elected to the American Advertising Federation's Hall of Achievement. So clearly, back in 97, they spotted you quite early on.
And I don't know what's happened since. But
but you made the Hall of Achievement.
I did. So I started out in 1985 at Intel. I'm from New York City, moved to Silicon Valley. Right place, right time. Started at Intel at a time when the PC industry was really just starting to take off.
And quite a hard thing to market to the world, I guess.
Well, I worked under a gentleman named Dennis Carter, who worked for the famous Andy Grove, and we were given a charter to try and see whether we could market microprocessors, which at the time seemed like the most ridiculous idea ever.
And this became the famous Intel Inside.
And it did.
Campaign.
So I was privileged to work on the development of the Intel Inside program, the development of microprocessor brands like Pentium. And we created a huge brand, one of the top 10 brands now in the world.
And what was the strategy?
The strategy was to get people to request a specific type of microprocessor inside a PC. And the campaign, the original idea was that we were the computer inside. So the brains of the computer were as important as the manufacturer's brand.
Okay, well, it's an opportunity too good to miss, because the next generation of Creative Suite comes along very soon. And, you know, I'm glad that we can give you this opportunity to tell us all about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't talk about unannounced products. I can tell you that it is coming very soon. It's going to be super cool. Lots of new features, lots of new capabilities. We'll also be integrating in some Omniture technology. We recently acquired Omniture, which is an analytics and optimization company. So lots of very exciting things to look forward to.
Now, the thing that strikes me about PDFs, for instance, is wouldn't they be amazing if you could do a bit more with them, like play video, for instance? Is that the sort of thing that we'll see when this launches?
Not able to talk about those types of things. I think, in general, PDFs are becoming more and more capable, and we do have a capability called PDF Portfolio, where you can integrate different types of media into a PDF. So you can integrate Flash video into a PDF. There are multiple different assets that can be integrated in. It's a pretty innovative way to look at PDFs.
I guess one of the reasons for asking, sort of wearing my journalist hat, is that thing of, you know, people sometimes describe PDFs as, you know, online publishing for old style print publishers who don't quite get the web because it doesn't have that same level of interactivity. I mean, is that something that you, regardless of what the product's got, something that the market wants, do you think?
So again, this idea of PDF portfolios, I would encourage you to take a look at that because it really does combine a lot of the different interactive mechanisms into one single PDF. But there are actually a lot of features in PDF that do enable you to have some interactivity and not just have the security and reliability of what people
and
think
people
about.
And people just don't use them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and I guess the other issue is just the sheer time and effort that goes in creating these things as well.
It doesn't really take that long. I've become a bit of an expert myself. I can maybe give you a little primer after this
interview.
Well, that's
very kind. Thank you very much. Now, to this week's events, it's been a big week for social media. Now, our most commented story of the week on Mumbrella was the launch of a new organisation called Women in Social Media. It was one of several different organisations which all had their social media events on the same night. Now, our much commented on story about the launch of Women in Social Media, who basically the angle of that one was self-appointed media gurus not wanted. So as a self-appointed media guru, you were first to comment on that story, Scott.
Okay, first off, I'm not a self-appointed media guru.
I mean, firstly, the central point of debate was this question about whether there needs to be a separate space for women working in social media.
I think my comment, which took me about an hour to craft, so I'm just winging this one right now, was basically that I don't think that social media women is needed, but that's from a personal point of view, because in my industry, it seems that women outnumber me at the moment. Why should social media to me, or social media and the larger scale of it, is all about conversation, it's all about equality, it's all about everybody helping each other out. And it's about, and I just don't understand, when you create a group that segregates half the population, what's the point of it? You're seeing, to me, it's just missing the point.
I guess one of the questions I had was Social Media Club Sydney. When I'd look around in the room, I'd maybe guess 60% women.
Yeah.
Similarly, the Digital Citizens, which also launched on the
Monday
night.
65% again.
Yes. I mean, Anne, is there a place for that sort of organisation, do you think? Would you join?
I'm totally perplexed by this, I have to tell you. I really don't understand it. I mean, I am a woman. I can't imagine joining a society like this. It's the most egalitarian way to comment on what's going on, and I don't see it as a gender issue at all.
Camille?
I mean, I guess in terms of the 40-60 splits in these events, what kind of roles do they have within the industry? So, for example, in London, there's a group called Wackle that was set up in 1928, still running. It's for women in advertising and communications, London. And, you know, they've basically, ironically enough, it was set up by men in advertising to promote women.
But now, marvelously patronizing.
No, it is, yeah. But in public events, they actually invite male guests. They welcome them. You know, they have been trying to be progressive. And these are women in power within their industries. And so from that perspective, I can see it. But this is a much smaller niche. It's more specific. So in this instance, I probably wouldn't agree. Perhaps in the case of Wackle, I can see the points.
I suppose the one question I'd raise is, looking at the tweet pics from the event, clearly there was a pretty good turnout. There was a bit of a tweet stream that seemed quite positive from it. Arguably, there must be some sort of need or desire for that.
Is it women who are working in social media, or women who are tweeting?
I think women who want to, women who are working in it, maybe women who want to get into the industry. I know the girls who are launching it, and you know, they're great people, and if they want to do it, and you know, it's up to them. And if women want to go along and they feel empowered by it, then that's great. You know, but as a personal point of view, then I find it quite discriminatory. I think that the moment you segregate half the population, then, you know, you're, especially in social media, where it's just about conversation, and it's about, it doesn't matter who you're talking to, man or woman, it shouldn't be about that.
Okay, well, same night, Digital Citizens, which is, you're one of the members of the organising committee
members
of that.
I
guess the key debate was about sensible tweeting. Now, I kind of went, when I went along, I actually expected to hear far more kind of, for want of a better word, moaning from some of the panel on, we can't say whatever we want. Whereas pretty much the tone from all of the panel was actually, you know, particularly from Sam North, Mogul VPR, was very much, you know, don't think to yourself that you once had the right of freedom to say whatever you wanted about your clients or your employer. You didn't unless you were around the dinner table.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the moment you put something into the online, you know, space, people can see it, and people, no matter what happened, will judge you on that. You've got future employers will look at what you've said. You know, they might deny that they do, but they will go look at what's been said by you. And, you know, whatever you see online is captured in time, I suppose.
But especially thanks to Google. And maybe the tone that sort of came through, and maybe came through from one or two of the questions as well, is just this idea that it's actually a bit sad that, you know, you might be relatively junior in a PR agency, you may comment on something you've seen in the newspaper, and because you criticise the journalist and you work in a PR agency, maybe you can't anymore. You've lost that freedom.
Look, I think that freedom was never there unless you spoke to your friends. I mean, we all know what rumours happen. You could say something to your friend, and they tell another person. The journalist finds out what's been said. So it's just one of those things. You've never had that. It's just more open now and more, it can get back to the person quicker. So it should all be about common sense. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still tweet a load of crap half the time, and I run an agency, but there's still like brands that I don't bag out, that kind of stuff. There are brands that I do bag out because I've had bad customer service or something, and it's never going to stop me from being who I am. But I think that you still need to put common sense on and look about what the future implications of what you say online are.
And Scott sounds like a horror employee. what's Adobe's policy?
So we're actually just forming our policies, and being a technology company, we have a lot of people who are very engaged in tweeting, in blogging, in Facebooking, and you know, our feeling is that we should enable our employees to speak freely on issues. Now, you do need to have some guidelines, and so we do give guidelines on messaging. We do give guidelines certainly on talking about unannounced products and such, but what we find is there's an authenticity that you can have from your employee speaking that at the kind of corporate level is just not really possible. And so we want and encourage our employees to be able to speak out and comment on our products as well as issues that are occurring in the industry.
And they become ambassadors for your products.
They absolutely do. And again, I think this genuineness and this authenticity is really the benefit to the company.
Camille, where would you draw the line between the public and the private?
Well, no, I think just we've kind of reached a stage now where it's, you know, it's a reality and companies do need to, as you said, Anne, draw up guidelines. And for me, probably even an actual training day or an hour and actually speak to staff verbally with someone, with an actual expert, bringing them into a company and then having that set guidelines for the staff to adhere to.
Okay. Now, the other thing that went on at Digital Citizens, the other coming of age for social media, was Sydney had its first swarm, which is a Foursquare thing, which, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm more of a junior to Foursquare than you are, Scott, it's where 50 Foursquare users all check in at the same venue at the same time.
Yes, because we had 148, 150 people at the event. So there you go, one-third of the people at the event were using Foursquare, which was quite impressive to be first.
For those who don't know Foursquare,
it's an application that you use on your iPhone or other phones, or you can use on the web.
But the key thing is mainly for mobile devices.
Yes, mobile devices to check in to the location you're in. Now, I found it useful when I was in a pub one day, checked in, and one of my friends was walking by and walked in and said, I just saw you in Foursquare, thought of a pint with you. I was like, brilliant, good to see you. And it's a great, you know, it's good for stalking, I suppose, as well. But it's great for having people, you know, your friends know where you are, because you allow people into it, so it's not like anybody can find you.
And there's a marketing opportunity as well.
Massive marketing opportunity. It started off with coffee shops really saying, you know, if you become the mayor of our coffee shop, we'll
give
you
free coffee.
Which you
better explain how you become the mayor of the coffee shop.
You become the mayor by checking in more than anybody else, basically.
So in any given, and they reset each week, so in any given week you have one person who's the mayor of that coffee shop.
And I'm the mayor of my house, I think, and that's about it.
Yeah, you know, but I've been along to a coffee shop where the guy behind the counter, one of his friends, has tipped them off that the person I was with was the mayor, and they've got the, you know, the photo on Foursquare, so he recognised her and gave her a free croissant, you know. And so things like that are kind of good
marketing. You can put tips in as well, so if you're walking around, say, Sydney, then you'll probably find tips only from Frank Sting, because he seems to put about 8 billion tips out a week. That's at Frank Sting on Twitter. But yeah, you get tips from random people. There is one bit of warning I will give you. If you do put a tip in, it cannot be deleted, and you may regret putting it in, as I witnessed it one other day that basically commented about how someone likes to do something. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, I don't think you do need to say any more, but I think we will be talking about Foursquare a lot more in future weeks. On to more traditional PR, well, PR for TV anyway. Now, PR man Jodie Hughes was caught out trying to hoax A Current Affair.
I made a big mistake, and I'm very regretful, and I realised ethically what I did wasn't correct, and that's what I understand and grasp now.
A public relations man comes clean. A story he arranged was bogus.
Are you sorry?
I'm very sorry. It's an easy answer. That comes from the heart. Yes.
So what went on was he was working for a particular brand. They were trying to create a story all about people coming along to these gold parties where they bring along their unwanted jewellery, maybe after an unfortunate relationship or something, and they sell it. So he needed a bunch of angry, bitter, middle-aged women who were willing to slag off their ex-husbands on camera. Funnily enough, he struggled to find them. So he hired a model agency. Unfortunately, the emails leaked, and he was busted by the Current Affairs programme that he was trying to hoax. So it became that classic thing of the camera in his face in a car park as he admitted his sins. Now Scott, would have been a great idea if he got away with it, wouldn't it?
First time I'm going to just get your journalism and throw out the window with this one. He's not a PR man, he's a publicist. There's a massive difference.
Well, surely publicist is a subset of PR.
It's still a difference between a PR man and a publicist, okay? Max Markson is a publicist. I'm a PR man, okay? I just want to...
You're a PR man who sometimes looks publicity, though.
Occasionally, but there's a difference in careers. So that's like saying a journalist and a blogger, if you want to get down to semantics on this one.
I'd argue again, though. It's possible to be both. In this case,
you know me, and I'm quite an ethical person, and I think that this is absolutely abhorrent to do that. To hire people to try and fill the media is just absolutely disgusting.
Surely, if you're a brand, you want a PR man that's going to do anything to get you.
No, you don't. God, no, that's your worst nightmare.
And you're shaking your head slightly at that.
I completely agree. I think it's absolutely... and it's an atrocity, quite frankly. And again, back to this idea of being authentic and being genuine and having people trust you, which is the basic hallmark of a brand is trust. So if you have somebody like that at the PR level doing that kind of stuff, inexcusable.
Now, Camille, what he was quite good at, though, was the damage limitation once he was caught.
Yeah, you could say that. He went on ACA and Today Tonight and was very... heartfelt in his apology, and
said
even
he made a most big mistake.
Even read out the emails happily, which was a bit odd.
Yeah, that was the thing, because that was the bit that made me a little suspicious. Was when Today Tonight were doing the story, the voiceover was him reading out the smoking gun emails. But I understand what happened with the original Current Affair confrontation in the car park. Was we didn't know this at the time we wrote it, but I've since found out was that he was caught out by the crew. And he knew all of them. He'd worked with them on previous stories. So there was an existing relationship. So I think there was a 5 or 10 minute off-camera negotiation before he came back on camera.
Right.
And
that would make sense.
He made clear that he'd made a mistake and that he'd learned his lesson and would never do it again. Now, still talking PR jargon, I'm not going to read out this whole press release, but this dropped in my email inbox this week. The headline, Orbis Global, a visionary and magic quadrant for marketing resource management 2010. The subheadline, Australian marketing management software provider recognised by leading analysts. And then into the story, Orbis Global, a leading provider of marketing resource management. And by the way, every one of these words is capitalised. software, today announced its position in the visionary quadrant in Gartner, Inc.'s magic quadrant for marketing resource management. And then it lists the year of 20101, which is a long time away yet, but we'll put that down as a typo. The report evaluates vendors based on completeness of vision and ability to execute against key marketing resource management criteria. Again, you have to imagine all of those words with capitals. And so it goes on. So we had a bit of fun, and we just published the press release as it was, and asked our readers for a translation. Yes, Scott. I mean, you've been both a tech journalist and a tech PR,
and a normal journalist,
and
as well.
A normal journalist as well.
It's a real one.
There are very few tabloid journalists. But firstly, was it just that I was the wrong audience, and some people that
journalist, I'd still find that to be incredibly boring. Secondly, it's a terribly written press release. The intro is too long. There's no backup second paragraph. Your second paragraph should be the third paragraph, and it's a quote that's far too outrageously long. You know, you're trying to get someone's attention. As a journalist, you know as well as I, you're getting 20, 30, 40 press releases a day. You need something short, sharp, and snappy that'll grab your attention. That makes you want to go to sleep or else throw it in the bin.
And I guess you have to get messages, and sometimes they're of a highly technical nature. How do you strike the balance?
Well, I think the original 2 points that you just made about brevity are critical. And I encourage my staff, make it short, make it simple. We're doing a lot more social media press releases where there are links so people can actually get a lot of the information directly from the source instead of us going on and on about it.
Now, Camille, again, good damage limitation, though, in that Grant Halloran, the CEO,
he did respond.
Within about 20 minutes or half an hour, he was joining in the comment stream, putting his hands up and saying, actually, we're just proud of what we do. And
but then he went on to write a whole load of boring crap again.
But at least it was understandable.
Well, it was,
crap.
But it was still... He just used
it
as another platform to get a medium to get his message across, when he should have just said, look, really sorry, hands up. We just want to say one line is what we're doing, and that's it. Instead, he, oh, God, I was nearly sleeping again.
OK, well, we'll move on to other topics in a moment. That's where Anne has to leave us, though, on to other appointments. So, Anne, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Now, here's something you don't see every day, or at all, an ad for Head & Shoulders before the ABC's Australian Story. Now, it became quite the saga. I guess I should probably explain this one. The ABC uses YouTube to promote some of its forthcoming programmes. They're proudly not funded by advertising content, are very, very strict about that one. So I saw something a bit odd earlier this week when I subscribed to the... yeah, looked in the mirror, that's right. But I also subscribe to the new on ABC YouTube channel. So when there's a new piece of programme, if you're logged into YouTube, up it comes. And watched a 15-second pre-roll ad for Head & Shoulders shampoo. And tried to replay it a few times. It didn't happen again. And then eventually I kept having another go, refreshing the page. And then I saw an ad for Gillette Fusion, which is another Procter & Gamble brand. Now, YouTube has been experimenting for the last couple of weeks with pre-roll ads. It's still quite a new thing. So it wasn't at all clear whether this was something that YouTube had been a bit naughty on, or whether suddenly the ABC takes advertising.
When I first read the story, I was like, ooh, this could be interesting to see. Somebody's either messed up somewhere, or, you know, YouTube are just throwing it out somewhere to try it for just random areas and, you know...
Yeah, so it became quite the saga. It then became even more interesting when the ABC issued a statement. So they demanded to know what had happened.
That's right. So in a quote, the ABC says, the ABC has also requested a response from YouTube regarding how an advertisement came to appear on the channel.
And obviously in journalistic terms, a request becomes a demand.
Yes.
So it kind of looked like the ABC was suggesting that Google, who own YouTube, or YouTube, had been very naughty. It all went then very quiet for the next 24 hours. Neither one of them would sort of return calls on it until sort of just early evening time. They both put out releases. It all then went very quiet for the next 24 hours or so. Neither one of them would comment on it until suddenly they both put out statements within a few moments of each other. The ABC one still said, ABC does not run advertising on its new on ABC TV YouTube channel. When it was brought to our attention that a pre-roll ad was featured on this channel, the ABC worked with YouTube to remove it. Meanwhile, YouTube/Google issued the release. Pre-rolls are a new ad format which Australian YouTube content partners can opt into. We recently worked with the ABC to correct some account settings relating to where pre-roll ads would show. This has been resolved.
Now, somebody clicked the wrong button.
Yeah, this is the thing. I don't think the ABC has actually changed their policy on advertising overnight. I think maybe a WebMonkey
clicked the wrong button. Mm-hmm. Is that what it looks the most likely
that
to pro-
from stuff? Those releases, that's Google slash YouTube have went, yep, you guys are idiots. You didn't click this button, and ABC have went, yeah, we don't do ads. We unclick that button.
Okay, so that was a bit of fun anyway. Let's move on to another story that was much talked about this week. Plaudits for Naked Communications and Frank PR, which are both Photon agencies this week, as they picked up 4 awards at AMIA, the Australian Interactive Media Industry Association, did that from memory, at the AMIA Awards for their joint Ask Richard campaign, which was for FBI Radio. Now, the idea in a nutshell was to get their listeners and other people to ask Richard Branson, billionaire Richard Branson, to bail them out. It's got a good campaign?
Yeah, great campaign. Fantastic. I got a lot of time for Frank PR. I think they're a good agency. M&M, as I call them, led by Miff McGregor and 2IC Mike Morris. No, their stuff's great. I mean, they've come on in leaps and bounds as an agency since Miff set it up over here. And yeah, great stuff. I mean, and I think that in the next year, you're going to see a lot more from them. I think they're going to be one of the big challengers to One Green Bean.
Now, there was also some suspicion as well, which was this question of one of the bits of the PR stunt was Richard Branson claiming that a woman swam to Necker Island, which is his island out in the Caribbean or wherever it is, to ask him to support and sponsor the campaign. Camille, would that sound suspicious as a story to you?
Yes, slightly. I think alarm bells may be ringing at that stage.
Yeah, so that was certainly one of the much debated things in our comment stream. Was
this is Richard Branson, though, you know?
Yeah, was the story, you know? And
anything's possible.
Yeah, and the debate was kind of around whether Richard Branson made it up or the.
Do we know how far the island is from the land? It could be like 50 meters.
Long, far enough, I think. But yeah. So that was one of the debates. Was, you know, and almost does it if Richard Branson joined in and embellished the story a bit? Does it matter?
It's his choice to embellish it. It's his brand.
Okay. Fine.
And to be honest, he does crazy stuff anyway. So you wouldn't expect it not to happen to him.
Now, finally, we take a look at the TV ratings, and at last, you can go online to complain about your free-to-air TV programme. So I guess, let's talk complaints first. Camille, guess we're probably going to see more complaints as a result.
Well, you would think so, having an extra avenue. So previously it was via post, snail mail or fax. Now you can just go online on the free TV website, and it's quite straightforward, fill in the details.
Have you done a complaint yet yourself?
Not yet, but I'm dying to do one. I'm looking for something, but it needs to be legitimate. It's just not just for the heck of it, really.
Oh, so you can't just complain that it's all crap?
Well, go for it, Scott.
Yeah, I think you need to find a specific breach of the code, a potential breach of the code. So, but certainly I imagine what we'll see is, as soon as a programme offends, which they do from time to time, I'm sure we'll see the first Twitter campaign to, here is the complaints form, and then we'll see
how the numbers come.
Interesting ratings week, Camille. Rare win one night this week for 10 had the biggest programme of the night, which was...
Look, NCIS, their US crime show, it does usually rate quite well anyway for 10. So it had a really good Tuesday ratings results. It was NCIS was the highest rating show for the day, for the whole Tuesday.
I actually gobsmacked by that.
Oh, I love it. I used to watch it religiously.
I watched the first season, Mark Harmon, great actor and stuff, but I just gobsmacked that that's the choice of programme.
Look, I'm sorry, I'd rather see NCIS than Today Tonight.
Oh, no,
as
I agree.
One.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Which does happen a little too often in this country. I think the attraction to it is basically it's everyone loves crime shows, but it has a sense of humour. It doesn't take itself too seriously. But it was a good ratings result for 10 as well, because it was the day after ABC One beat...
Spanked them.
Channel 10, the main channel. Yeah, spanked them and got... came in third ahead of 10 in the ratings. It was about ABC One 16.3%, ahead of 10's 15.2%.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it, with 10? I mean, they very much do go after the younger demographic, and if you look at the sort of 16-39s, they tend to they do tend to rate much better.
Yeah,
there.
Well, the thing is, it's actually interesting. Even though NCIS was the highest rating show overall for Tuesday, it wasn't the highest rating among 16-39s or the other 18 to 49's age group, that actually went to a Channel 7 and a Channel 9 show. My Kitchen Rules is doing really well among 16 to 39 shows, which is Channel 7, the rival to Channel 10's MasterChef, and Top Gear, which got in about 1.3
Channel 9's new signing.
Channel 9, another big show for Channel 9, was number one among 18 to 49-year-olds, so again, ahead of NCIS. So it seems as though the younger viewers are going for the big shows on 7 and 9, such as My Kitchen Rules and Top Gear, whereas NCIS is actually attracting older viewers for Channel 10, which is skewed younger.
So Wednesday night tends to be one of the night for youth on the ABC. They have things like I spelled it with an F.
I thought that, yeah.
Yeah, YOOF is the correct spelling, I think you'll find. So Hungry Beast did quite well, which is the Andrew Denton thing on the ABC. Spicks and Specks always wins the night for the youngsters.
Yep.
And it was interesting that 10 did quite well as well, because you could have seen the audience sort of separating out a bit. So you do get the feeling, Camille, that at the very least 10 are hanging on to their younger audiences.
I know, absolutely. By no means are they not doing well at all. I mean, their shows are still quite strong. And when you look at The Biggest Loser, for example, that's still strong, and So You Think You Can Dance, it's still rating well for 16 to 39-year-olds. So they're continuing on with their skew.
I looked at the top 15 on Tuesday night's day, and The Rivers with Griff Rhys-Jones came in at 800,000 viewers, which actually just shocked me there.
Too many or too few?
No, it kind of made me a little bit happy that somewhere out there in Australia there's a bunch of people watching some good stuff.
Well, that's the funny thing, isn't it? When you look, you know, and you almost need the kind of leveller when you look at ABC and even worse, SBS ratings.
Yes, and that's on ABC, that's 800,000 on ABC, that's great.
Yeah, which, you know, that's a pretty strong audience for the ABC. Anyway, we're out of time. That's it for now. Thanks to my co-hosts, Camille Alacon of Mumbrella.
Thank you.
And Scott Rohde of House Party PR.
Thanks, Tim.
And also to Anne Lunas, who was in with us earlier from Adobe. Thank you also to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella podcast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.